Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Well, we have not one but two guests on the show tonight, two friends and advocates who are going to help us understand some of the issues surrounding out-of-home care and the challenges facing young Australians when they reach the age of 18 and their right to foster care needs. Thanks to the tireless work of some 200 community welfare organisations, the Home Stretch Coalition has been successful in getting six out of eight states and territories to commit to significant reforms to the foster care system, and our guests are celebrating their role in this momentous step forward for thousands of vulnerable young Australians. It is my pleasure to welcome to Great Australian Lives Paul McDonald, the CEO of Anglicare and Chair of Home Stretch, and Dylan Langley from Berry Street, and of course he is a Home Stretch ambassador too. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Thank you for being with us.
Good to be with you, Laura.
Thank you. And thanks to you too, Dylan. Now, I want to talk first of all about the reforms. I do know a little bit about this from different people's stories. But Paul, first of all, can you tell me, from the 1st of January this year, the Victorian government will now extend out-of-home care until the age of 21. For all time, it was that foster kids had to leave those homes at 18. That extra 3 years, tell us why, Paul, that is so important, this reform.
Yeah, look, it's significant for many fronts, for the young people concerned and for really the Victorian community. And the reason why is that we know that raising young people, it just doesn't all stop just the turn of 18. Look, you know, when you do turn 18, sure, you can have a beer in a pub and maybe drive a car, but adult, it does not make you by just turning that age. And it's been so important that the state, that being the state government who've been raising these young people, continue to commit their care and support as they raise into young adults. And what we've said is that if you just provide three further formal years of that support from 18 to 21, some extraordinary, remarkable things will come just from that simple reform. We know we'll halve the homeless rate for this group. And they represent, Laura, two-thirds of the youth homeless population, that is care leavers. So we know we'll halve the homeless rate by three further years. We'll double their education employment rates. We'll reduce their contact with the justice system. But importantly, they're feeling secure and cared for further by the state right through to 21. And that's why it's been such an important reform that the Victorian government have announced.
That is extraordinary, Paul, to halve the homeless rate just from those 3 years. What can you tell me about why the significance of 18 to 21 in terms of life choices and education and that sort of thing? Why those 3 years?
Well, let me take you back into the early years. If a child in care is reminded, told repetitively, look, things are going to be finished, you're going to be on your way, when they're told at 13, 14, I mean, ridiculously, I'd put it this way, every young person in care at 15 requires a leaving care plan. Well, how can you go to a 15-year-old and say, look, you've got to start thinking about where your next step? We know, look, I've had 15-year-olds. My two are now 19 and 21. But if I went to my son at 15 and said, where's your leaving care plan? He'd probably go, oh, what are you talking about, Dad? And so what is important about these three further years is that we take out the uncertainty and the anxiety about what's going to happen next to me. And that means that young people then start to sort of commit to their situation. It's not going to be taken from me, so I'm not going to start making decisions about, oh, maybe it's not for me because I'm going to be kicked out anyway, or I'm going to end, I might as well go. So why the three further years is not only that you're going to get secure support during those 18 to 21 years, but you're being told everything. We're going to see you through till you're ready rather than see you through until you're 18.
Yeah, and I can imagine, you know, those years, 14, 15, are so formative to start to lay the seed, or, you know, bury the seed of uncertainty at that time could be enormously damaging.
Well, I think it's, funnily enough, I know the system's trying to be best intentioned by saying, let's prepare you for adulthood. But in fact, what it really does is undermines their sense of security and connection with the state, with the parent, with their carers. Now, we know that also, Laura, that foster carers and kinship carers aren't going to say, well, you're 18, out you go. Of course, they're going to continue on, but they're continuing on by themselves, not in partnership with the state that can actually provide the work or provide the resources to help keep that placement, keep that connection with their care environments going through to 21.
Now, I want to talk to you, Dylan. We hear about your personal story in a moment, but As an advocate for the Home Stretch Coalition, how did you feel when you found out the government had agreed to extend foster care to that age of 21? That must have been a really personal moment for you.
How to describe that? I don't think there were any words to describe that announcement when it came. I shed a few tears. Like, it was so life-changing for many young people just to know that they're going to have their support. An 18-year-old's birthday in out-of-home care is normally seen as doomsday. So to know that that was taken away and that they're actually going to have a chance at staying in care and slowly transitioning into an adult and getting that extra support was phenomenal. There was nothing to describe that feeling. After so many years of trying to make this happen, to hear that we had it here in Victoria was just absolutely amazing. We've still got a fair way to go because, as you said, we've only got 6 out of 8 states, so there's still a bit to go, but we're making progress. And it's like every state that jumps on board is changing lives.
Yeah, and kudos to you, Dylan, for being a part of the solution. I mean, it's so sad to hear some of the stories that come out of foster care, you know, and the troubles that some young men and women have. So, you know, it's incredible that you are part of this solution. And I can hear it in your voice. It is a very personal achievement for you. Can you explain the difference between foster care and out-of-home care for those listening who don't understand that difference?
Yeah, so foster care, like, broadly, it all encompasses into foster care for the general public, but the difference tend to be there's different types of care and out-of-home care. So you've got residential units, you've got kinship care, you've got foster care, and then you've got some smaller ones like lead tenant where there's a transition to independence. But the general term is that it's out-of-home care, or to the broader public, it's just been labelled as foster care.
And was it, did it take a lot of convincing? As you said, we've got 6 of the 8 on board, but did it take a lot of convincing to get those 6 on board to embrace the reforms?
Look, I don't think any life-changing movement has ever happened easy. It's always taken a number of years of work behind the scenes, a lot of conversation to be had, a lot of advocating, a lot of money spent on like trying to build this up, and resources that just generally aren't there. So it takes a team of passionate people to try and start this, and then you create a movement. So it hasn't been easy. But we've had plenty of organisations put their hand up going, yes, we think this needs to happen. And Paul's been amazing with that as well, just trying to navigate that along with his team.
Paul, can I ask you, does it make financial sense? I mean, I know, you know, a lot of these decisions for government behind the scenes is about dollars and cents. Does it make financial sense for the government to extend from 18 to 21?
Yeah, it does. And look, the economic or the financial case is as important as the social and emotional case, really, of about raising children. And I get it with governments. They think, oh, well, hang on, job done at 18. What do you ask me to do again, home stretch? Write more, you know, checks for a group past 18? And I say to any minister, you're writing checks already, minister. You're writing checks for homeless shelters. You're writing checks for detention centres. You're writing checks for, you know, unemployment. You're writing checks already. It's just we're asking you to actually provide resources to something that will actually reduce your costs. Now, the case for any $1 spent on extended care, the range is you'll get a government will get a return between $2.80 to about $3.70, $3.80 return for every $1 spent on extended care. So the economic case, as you put it, Laura, in the sense of if I'm going to put, you know, $22,000 a year for every year for the next 3 years just for these young people, and that's all really we've costed it as what extended care, a government can safely think that, you know, let's add that up, that's $66,000. So the government will get upwards of $200,000 return on that $66,000 investment. So from a financial point of view, it makes a lot of sense. In fact, it actually saves government money rather than, in fact, requires him to spend it more.
Yeah, it always turns out that way, doesn't it? That long-term look at the books is more beneficial with these sorts of decisions. Now, Foster Care Week happened recently, which included the Home Stretch Symposium. What were some of the takeaways from Foster Care Week given these changes?
Well, Foster Care Week, which is an important week every year because we celebrate carers who are bringing still young people into their homes, even through a pandemic, Laura, you know, right the way through this pandemic, we've had foster carers accepting young people, children, toddlers, homeschooling for bigger households. You know, they really are, you know, our quiet heroes out there. But what happened at the symposium is that we actually heard, and the symposium was really bringing all of governments around Australia and stakeholders and young people to talk about the great gains that can be had with extending care to 21. And what we found out that nearly just over 1,000 young people are now enjoying extended care. That is care through to 21. You know, it's an absolute flip for their lives. It's an absolute sort of, now they've got some sense of future and certainty, and they're tremendous stories. Now, what we heard is this is great for the six states. Let's keep going and let's make all of wherever a child is in care in Australia, that they know that they'll be raised through to 21 till they're ready to go. And sure, you know, further than that, we know that, in fact, I think about 45% of 25-year-olds are still with one or both parents. But what we're wanting to do is get the care system at least committing to 21. We think we'll ensure a better start than what they're receiving at the moment.
Well, that's great news. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And for more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Our guests tonight are Paul McDonald, CEO of Anglicare Victoria, and Dylan Langley, an ambassador for the Home Stretch Coalition. We'll be back in just a moment.
As I approached 18, I had a leaving care plan put in place. Unfortunately, it fell through and I was told that my best option was going to be a homeless shelter. I was told this about a couple of months prior to turning 18, and luckily that wasn't the case. I didn't end up going to a homeless shelter just then. I ended up in a transitional property. But that was only for 12 months, and straight at the end of that, I had nowhere to go and found myself homeless and couch surfing and sleeping in the park, which I was doing before I went into care anyway. So it kind of just prolonged it. You gave me a safe place temporarily and then threw me back to where I was. What was the actual point in DHHS stepping in?
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. We just heard a little of one of our guests, Dylan Langley's advocacy videos for the Home Stretch campaign, which has lobbied state governments around Australia to extend the options for young people needing out-of-home care to the age of 21. And they have been successful in doing so in most states and territories. We're also joined by Paul McDonald, CEO of Anglicare. But Dylan, I want to talk to you about your personal story, if you are willing to share some of that with us. You had a pretty conflicted relationship with your mum, as I understand. Can you tell me how your story unfolded and how you ended in foster care?
So, yeah, I did have a very conflictual relationship with my mum. There were issues at home where she just, I don't think she really comprehended on or managed how to be a mother, and the pressure of having kids. Like, I understand that's difficult, but it just tended to build and explode. They were like, it resulted in a bit of family violence and me running away quite often. Running away at night, trying to sleep in the back of the school, which then resulted in the social workers at the school reporting it to the department. And there were several calls of me absconding from home, running away, not feeling safe there. And the police were obviously documenting all that. And it just got to the point where the department stepped in and came to the school one afternoon and took me off to the court and rang Mum on the way there and said that she's got an hour to show up to the court, and she said she didn't care. So she didn't even bother attesting to me going into care. She just let it happen. So that's how I ended up in out-of-home care. Wow. I ended up in foster care for a little bit and then moved into a residential unit, which funnily enough was looked after Paul's organisation. So they did a great job in the early days of helping me there as well.
Dylan, how old were you when that occurred? I mean, that is a deeply traumatic story.
I went into care when I was 12, so I hadn't even hit my teen. I was just off hitting my teenage years at that time.
And how did you find, you know, that initial, I guess, appointment with a foster care family, arriving and in a strange home with effectively strangers? I mean, how did that happen for you?
Look, it was difficult. It was kind of weird because on one hand, I felt, sounds really bad to say this, but it felt safe in a sense to be away from what I was used to. But it still felt very weird and not like it doesn't feel like a home either. Like it's, as you said, it's with strangers. It takes time to build that relationship. So, yeah, it was very, I isolated myself a lot in the early days. I didn't know what to expect. And I think that goes for a lot of young people when they start off, they tend to withdraw. I saw it a lot later on, many other people doing the same thing, trying to withdraw as soon as they get into a property. It takes time to get used to, more often than not. You're going to find that you end up moving around to a few different places. So then it also creates a barrier in that. How often do you move? How often do you bother unpacking? And there's a range of different reasons that you end up moving around. It's not just an organization fault or whatever. It's policy within the department. It's whatever's happening within the property, who owns the property. So that fault doesn't fall on anyone. It's just circumstances that happen.
Yeah, that my next question was going to be about that, and that is no fault of the foster carers, obviously, or obviously the child. But that... knowing that, you know, your time will come to an end at some stage must seed a really deep sense of insecurity in you. I mean, one hand you're safe and you have a caring family, but knowing you have to move on can't be helpful to a child.
No, absolutely not. I think, like, from the department side, we need to try and limit how often we try and move young people between placements. It tends to happen quite a lot. But as I said, that's not to a fault of anybody. It's just an issue that we have to face, but one issue at a time that we got to fix. And it is, like, the more you move around, the less you bother to unpack, the less you feel inclined to try and make it a home, because it creates this feeling of, well, what's the point? How long am I actually going to be here for?
Yeah. Dylan, do you have fond memories of some of the families you were with?
Oh, of course. There's moments that I really enjoyed. There was a foster family where I went to the same school as one of the foster kids, and we got on quite well. And, like, yeah, outside of that, like, he'd introduced me to some of the music that he enjoyed. We'd shared computer games at the home. And then there's other places where I'd create relationships with some of the other young people that were living there. Particularly in residential units where you've got shift workers, you tend to bond with the young people there a bit, and you'd end up going to the shopping centres and hanging out a bit there throughout your teenage years as you do. So there are some fond memories. It's not all doom and gloom. It's just a matter of, like, yeah, trying to make the most out of it, but also keeping in mind, when is it going to come to an end? Because that's kind of what you drilled into, as Paul said earlier, like, you get asked that from 15, you get told it at 13 that you're gonna have to think about it, and then, like, yeah, at 15 you're expected to have a solution, and it's like, well, does anyone have that plan yet?
Can't imagine at that age having a solution to it, to any sort of, you know, big life decision. You had a kids hope mentor though, and that was pretty important to you and pretty helpful, wasn't it, through those years?
Absolutely. So when I had the kids hope mentor, I was struggling with school. I wasn't really engaging. So to have someone that could come and take me out of class, but also just, like, it's always good to get out of doing work, don't get me wrong, but it was more than that. It was about building a relationship and actually having someone that you could feel comfortable enough to talk to. And that really highlighted, and that this particular mentor helped well and beyond just going, hey, we need to get you struggling in this area. They helped with the transition through the department, and when it came to court time, like, they were having conversations with my workers. They were really putting in a lot of effort outside of what their role was. And they were never like, they never spoke down to me either. They're like, yeah, you've gone through a rough time, but you're going to pull through. You've just got to stay strong and keep taking it one day at a time.
Hmm. Yeah, you're an admirable young man, Dylan. You've done some, you've turned into a young man who volunteered and worked with Berry Street as well in those early days. Tell us about the work that you do at Berry Street and what you find most rewarding there.
So I'm a lived experience consultant working at Berry Street as part of the Y Change team. And I absolutely love it. So what I do, I work on a range of different projects, do a little bit of public speaking. But I absolutely really love the team that I've got around me there. It's an absolutely amazing team. There's not too many of us, but we've all got each other's backs. And it doesn't matter what happens. We're all very supportive of each other. We know that we've walked different paths in life. And we all have this passion for trying to help other people. And it just makes the workplace so much more enjoyable when you've got that.
Oh, good on you. That is wonderful to hear. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guests are Paul McDonald and Dylan Langley, both passionate supporters of the Home Stretch Coalition of some 200 community welfare organisations who are celebrating Australia's most significant modern reforms of the foster care system and providing a better start in adult life for thousands of vulnerable young people. We'll have more with both of those gentlemen in just a moment. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Tonight we are delving into the complexities of our out-of-home care system in Victoria. Our guests are Paul McDonald, the CEO of Anglicare Victoria, the chair of the Home Stretch Coalition, and Dylan Langley, who spent his childhood in and out of state care until the age of 18, at which point he was told to find a homeless shelter. A really touching story from Dylan, and great to know that that situation has changed a little bit now, given the work of Paul and Dylan, that those young people in foster care can now have an extra 3 years to find their feet. And the benefit of that is, is just incredible. And as we've heard from Paul McDonald, so, so useful to those young people. Paul, have a wonderful CV and you've done so much work for young, vulnerable people. You had a different childhood. You grew up in the suburbs of Melbourne with your family, three sisters and a brother, mum who was a home ec teacher, passed her love of food on to you. You must be reminded every day in your work of how lucky you were.
Yeah, yep. I consider myself very lucky. I had a great upbringing. And I think it's a good thing that we, you know, when you reflect on your life, that first of all, the first reflection should be, I got lucky. I mean, we've just heard Dylan's journey and his upbringing. And mine, nothing could be more different than that. And I suppose I started to think that, you know, rather than, getting lucky, what's the next thought? Well, maybe share that luck in that sense. You know, use the opportunities that maybe I'm fortunate enough to have to maybe create opportunities for others who from their own means no fault of their own, they've found without chance, a life without chance, a life without luck, a life maybe that not someone's not looking out for them. And I think my upbringing maybe propelled me, I suppose, into the areas where maybe, you know, creating chance and luck and opportunity is what I could do given the fortunate upbringing that I had.
Your dad was a pharmacist too and pretty community-minded. Was it his influence that put you on that path, do you think?
Well, I think both dad and mum were always very wide-minded, if I could, of others and their circumstances. And dad Dad, though, as a pharmacist, was interested in, you know, what are, particularly he was interested in community development, what are others doing in other countries in relation to the poverty they were experiencing. Mum was, you know, Dad and Mum were always entertaining at home, having dinner parties, having discussions like that. So certainly I was brought up to have a broader view of the world. You know, it's just not like this for everyone in the sense of family staying connected and together. So I think Dad, Mum and my environment had an indelible effect on me in relation to my circumstances.
Speaking of indelible effects on your life, you worked in India with Mother Teresa in Calcutta when you were only 18. I mean, that was that just a pivotal work for you?
Yeah, in a funny sort of way. When I look back, when I look at my son at the moment, I go, God, would I have let you go on anyway? I was at that age. But when I reflect on it now, Laura, I was certainly, and at the time, knowing that I wanted to work in amongst need and disadvantage, I did want to probably put myself into the deep end, I'd have to say. And so I wrote to the Sisters of Charity and from Melbourne and said, look, could I come and work? And they had also, not a parallel order, but they had the Brothers of Charity as well as Sisters of Charity. We're mainly only here. And so I stayed with them, but they wrote and said, yeah, come across if you're able to come across. And I worked in a couple of places, and the Death and Dying, as it was called, the Death and Dying House, of people who were brought in from the streets who were impoverished, starving, very malnourished to the point where they were very at risk. So I worked in that with Mother Teresa. She was interesting. It was actually a Christmas Day. I was washing this person down. It was very basic. We had about 40 people laying on stretchers in this big sort of tiled room, and that was about it, with a sort of a fairly rough toilet at the back. And we're administering a care and, you know, medication when we could get it. And I was wiping down this guy, and another pair of hands came down and gave me a hand. I turned around and said, oh, thanks very much for that. And it was Mother Teresa. And there for the next couple of days, well, I was there for quite a while, but there for the next couple of days, her and I worked together. There was only four or five of us in the centre over that Christmas period. Yeah.
That's just, you know, such valuable work and something I'm sure you'll never forget. You also worked in leadership and management with Victoria's Child Protection Services and Youth Justice Program. I cannot imagine some of the stories that you would have heard and dealt with in that role. I'm sure there's some really deep experiences there. Is it hard for some people to comprehend the challenges faced by so many? I mean, imagine you would take that stuff home.
Yeah, well, it is hard. You know, people and lives and young people and children and families and babies get themselves and through very confronting difficulties. And working in that area, I think it was important, a couple of things I'd say to you about that. I think it was important that never become too, you know, used to it, I suppose. You know, you still have to keep your soul open, so to speak, as you're reading this and needing to decide, well, what's the best response for the child protection area? How can we respond? Because it's a big system, a big human service system. But at the same time, bring, you know, every case is different. Every case requires a thinking about what to respond. And so one of the challenges is, with the numbers, how you're actually able to bring that best to every one of those cases. It hasn't, I suppose it has an effect, but I've always found that it's not a disarming effect on me. You know, I think it's been more like being involved in some very dark moments in people's lives, or being involved in some very traumatic incidents within families, that, you know, they're not asking me to actually also lose the plot, also get lost in that emotion. They're asking me to see them for the human beings they are, and what can I do to assist, and what can our system do to actually resolve and get them back on track. I mean, so I've never felt knocked off the pike in a sense of that, but I've always been aware of the, you know, I've been talking of luck. I felt lucky to be a part of their lives. I felt lucky to be able to make a contribution. And I've always carried that respect, whatever family or home that I'm walking in with.
Yeah, and Paul McDonald, I can imagine that you would have to have made some really difficult decisions and heartbreaking decisions for families, but in their best interests.
Well, yeah, that's right. And you've got to really test the capability of the family environment about whether the child will be safe and hold within that family. And it's important, and or not, and making that tough call as well. I think it is important also, the takeaway is that if we can invest in our vulnerable families and give them some of the resources and capabilities, you know, some of them are just weren't brought up with a mentor or role model to say, this is how to parent. You know, I think we heard a little bit of Dylan's story in relation to, you know, his comments about his mum and that, you know. And so I don't think we should assume it's all innate. It's all sort of gonna be okay. And so if we can invest in some of our particularly vulnerable parents and families, I do find in my work that they do pay you back in spades. They do get back on track, but it does take that commitment. And then there are some cases in which you know that you've got to make the call that things aren't going to be safe and well for the child in that. And can we create an alternative home for them, still connected and still be connected and hopefully be proud of their mum and dad, but an alternative home for them to raise with. And that's a very important part of the system.
Yeah, extremely important and pivotal decisions indeed. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, tobinbrothers.com.au. Our guests tonight are both part of the Home Stretch Coalition, and more with Paul McDonald and Dylan Langley in just a moment. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guests tonight are Paul McDonald and Dylan Langley, both passionate supporters of Home Stretch, a coalition which believes that young people in out-of-home care should have a safe home and support until they turn 21. It's such an incredible body of work that they have done. Dylan, I want to go back to you. Dylan Langley, you're an ambassador for this program, a person who has lived foster care experience. This is something that comes up all the time. It is a problem that has stretched on and on, but we obviously need more foster carers in Victoria, don't we?
Absolutely. Now more than ever, I feel like during the difficult times, there's a real uncertainty about a lot of things. But one thing for sure is these young people need a home. They need a safe roof over their head. They need someone that cares about them. And the foster carers that organisations do have, not just Anglicare, but everywhere, are doing a fabulous job. Like, I give credit to them. It's absolutely amazing to see people get around and trying to support other young people who may not have the best of backgrounds and may not have that loving, nurturing family around them at the moment. So, like, our current foster carers across the state and across the country are doing a fabulous job, but there's always a need for more, because the number of young people will always outweigh what we currently have.
Yeah. What do you think makes a good foster carer?
I think it's about having patience. The big thing is going to have patience and trying to create a space for the young person or young people in general just to feel comfortable and be open with them. In order for them to get settled, they're going to need to know a little bit about you. And it doesn't mean that you need to share your whole life story. It can just be basic little things like, what's your football team? But what that does is it creates a door to build that healthy relationship for them to then feel comfortable and come and talk to you. So, like, my best foster carers that I look back on their skill set, and it was, they gave me space and time where I needed it, but they were also made themselves present when I wanted someone to be around. And that just comes from building that relationship up. And it does take time.
Yeah, and a lot of patience, as you say, I can imagine. So much going on in that space. Paul, if people are listening tonight and wondering how they can help, are there ways that people can get involved in advocacy work for Home Stretch or look into volunteering or mentoring? How do we do it if we want to?
Well, it's a good question. And look, just on the foster care thing, if people went to Fostering Connections, just Google or on their computer, Fostering Connections, that gives you a good insight into what could fostering be like, what are, you know, commonly asked questions, where's my nearest foster care agency that maybe I can help out with. And it doesn't mean completely opening up your home. You could say, well, look, I've got a spare weekend, you know, that I could do some respite, some time out for another foster carer, or I could knit some clothes, or I could donate some baby clothes to that local foster care agency. It's just doing your bit that you feel comfortable with and you feel you want to make a contribution. But I do encourage your curiosity, I suppose, you know, the community's curiosity about, you know, giving and seeing where they can help, because I think it makes it for a better world. And certainly in relation to the lives like the Dillons of the world, it can certainly make them feel that they belong, that they're loved, which is a very important experience, isn't it? And then also that they can be that they can sort of, you know, have the great life chances that everyone else has and enjoyed around the community.
Absolutely. Now I've heard a little whisper, Paul, that you play in a band. Dillon, have you ever heard Paul play?
Now, calm the farm, Laura. Yes, well, yeah, just talking of a bit of an outlet. Yes, a poor attempt at it, I must say, but yeah, in a cover band called The Flares.
What instrument do you play?
I play saxophones and I do a bit of singing.
Oh, so, yeah, wow. There you go. Beautiful. And Dillon, have you had the pleasure of hearing it?
Not yet. He tends to try and keep that outside. I've heard it be mentioned, but yes.
Yeah. That's right.
I wish I knew that earlier. I would have got you to bring the sax in for the show.
I don't think your listeners can you would have play appreciated us out? That. Well, I think I'm doing the I'm listeners the favour by not doing that, Laura.
Oh, you are too humble. Gentlemen, Paul McDonald and Dillon Langley, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the show tonight. It has been so important to hear your story, Dillon, and your work, Paul, in getting all of our states and territories on board with the home stretch. And if you want more information, you're listening tonight, homestretch.org.au. Get involved and help young people going through foster care get a little bit more security and stability in their lives. Gentlemen, thank you.
Oh, good on you, Laura. Lovely to be with you.
If you enjoyed our chat with Paul McDonald and Dillon Langley tonight, you can share it with a friend by subscribing to the Great Australian Lives podcast. And, of course, join me at the same time next week when we celebrate another great Australian life.
Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.